You're tuned in to the Trademark Productions podcast, discussing all things web, tech, marketing, design, and business from sunny Detroit. Sound good? Let's get started.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
To another edition of
the Trademark Productions podcast, web dev, and everything sexy about blogging
in Detroit,
in the great metro Detroit.
So, do you like roller coasters?
I do, but we're definitely not going to be talking about Cedar Point or the flooded Six Flags down in the Houston area. But we are going to be talking about a marketing mix that will deliver success. So if you not in a quiet area, I invite you to roll up your windows, turn up the volume, get a pad of paper, and your favorite la pluma, la lapis.
Pen and pencil?
Yep.
Well, we are going to blow people's minds today, that's for certain, but let's also make people understand what we're talking about relating a roller coaster. Can't hear me?
No, go ahead. Oh.
A roller coaster to your business. So, what do you think the connection might be?
Sounds totally different. Growth, having the ability to grow up, throw up, you know, going through the startup, throw up, grow up phase. Internal processes, clear goals against the timeline.
Well,
the strategy and tactics backing those up.
As a business owner.
But I could be wrong.
No, you could be right. But as a business owner, if you sat down and you looked at your balance sheet,
yep,
and it looked sort of like a roller coaster, how would that make you feel?
Nauseous.
Right?
Nauseous.
Much like a roller coaster.
Much like a roller coaster.
So really where we're taking this analogy of a roller coaster, and actually we've termed it peaks and valleys, which we'll get into in a little bit.
You mean like when you go in one of the valleys?
Yes.
Yes.
For effect.
Peaks and valleys.
But really, those ups and downs are directly related to how you market.
Yes.
Believe it or not. So the marketing mix that you talked about that will blow your mind is pretty basic and straightforward, but you can attest to this. We run into people all the time that either have a really great idea where they pour all of their time and resources in, and it inevitably leads to a spike in sales or awareness or buzz or whatever, but inevitably that dies off, right? And then it becomes, why isn't anything happening after that for the next 6, 8, 10, 12 months?
This goes back to weight loss, getting healthy, slow and steady wins the race.
Right.
It definitely trains you and everything around you to get on a new path of something. It's no different than if you sold your home, moved somewhere else, and you have a different path to work. You have to get into those habitual forms that help attribute to your goal against your timeline. And you're talking about the peaks and valleys, and that's essentially putting down to the point of marketing only around certain times of the year.
Or only using certain tactics. And, you know, another thing that we see frequently is some people like one specific thing very much, and they don't put a lot of stock into other things. So maybe somebody loves PPC, but they don't love SEO. Or maybe somebody loves doing PR, but they're not really big into, blogging or social or anything that's a little bit slow and steady, right? So when you look at this inside of a vacuum, it makes perfect sense that you'd have both of these working in tandem to try and make the peaks a little less high and the valleys a little bit, less flat.
That was one of the valleys.
As it were. Did you do that again? That was kind of fun.
I need to set you up.
Oh, okay. In the valley.
That wasn't good. But when you were in the valley. And there it is. So
in your esteemed opinion, none of this is rocket science, right? So why do we have such a hard time getting people to understand that they need to do all of these things together?
I believe it's because reality. Let's look at an aspect here. You have a site. I now have this online brochure. I have this brochureware type of a website. I want to generate some leads. I get some leads from it. Being properly educated or knowing her. I get a gym membership. I decide to just go to the gym and start playing with a bunch of machinery and free weights and shit. And you know what? I strained myself, hurt my back, screw up one of my quadriceps or something like that. I get sweaty. I feel like I'm doing something, but I'm not really getting results. Nor do I have a self sense of accomplishment in any way, shape, or form, except that I'm showing up, I'm doing something, I'm creating action. Hiring a personal trainer and getting on a regime. So benchmarking exactly where you're at right now, where you'd like to be, and an experienced person giving you the very plain English of telling you approximately, in their opinion, professional opinion, how long it's going to take you to get to somewhere.
But that's also the slow and steady approach, right?
Yeah, and I think that's a way everybody needs to end up going. And you're going to be paying for that trainer. You're going to be paying for that gym membership. You're going to want to see results out of that. And it's a great segue because the parallel is that of online marketing because I'm not seeing immediate result. I'm not seeing something that's quantifiable.
Well, you at certain times you could, right?
When you get those leads.
Yeah. Or that was the idea around too, and for all of our esteemed listeners out there. The peak tactics that we talk about, and we'll recap this all on the blog, you know, is anything really that generated to or geared towards generating a spike, whether it's sales or notoriety. So if it's, you know, some compelling call to action, buy now, sale ends tomorrow, all of those great things. But, you know, that could be anything PPC that's sale related, email marketing that you're inevitably going to see a bump because it's in front of their face. PR, if you were able to get some earned media coverage, that usually generates a spike in interest. And any kind of event or promotion, so anything that's time sensitive or something that has a limited shelf life to get people to act right away. So balancing those out, and I think, Dwight, a little bit to your point, the valley or the things that are the slow and steady approach are things that need daily maintenance and attention, whether that's SEO, whether that's social, whether that's writing. PR can fall into that because it is something that takes time to materialize. So it kind of falls into both camps. But that goes back to your point of you have the trainer, the person working with you, you're going in day to day. But why do you also need the additional, the two-a-days, if you will, if we're going to use the weight training analogy, to generate those spikes to balance out some of the valleys?
These are very, very typical, and this is what has been trained to us. As marketers, as people performing this for a number of clients and companies over the past decade, these are things that search engines want to see. These are things that other adversary networks want to see as well. They're creating signals that will help to boost it and give it some type of level of push or performance or engagement. Obviously, if you are on Twitter all the time and you're connecting and you're posting a lot of tweets and they're getting a lot of retweets, that's going to snowball and make into bigger things. But once you back off of doing those things, they're now going to latch on, or their algorithms are going to latch on to more of people that have picked up where you left off, essentially.
So really the notion, which we could apply here, of starting and stopping is sort of the kiss of death, because if you get some traction, then you stop, then you're inevitably going back and starting over.
That's correct.
Right?
That is correct.
So you need the proper balance of sprinting towards the top, as well as the long, leisurely stroll or jog.
Yes, people come and they say, "Okay, I want to optimize my site." Or we just had a client that a very, very luxury brand. We did a complete rebuild. We were then at the point of talking with them about continuing on with maintenance and marketing, and that's a very, very broad term. And they said, "No, we went with another guy that." Who's hosting our site and is traditionally a photographer, and he's also going to be performing SEO. And I know that what we had quoted did not even include anything that was part of an SEO strategy, or didn't have an SEO strategy included. And they said his proposal just came in underneath ours. And ours was just for maintenance and some consulting to guide their team. So it was kind of blowing me away because they were more budget conscious, and how do I have this amount of money, so how do I buy what I need with this amount of money, rather than look at the value of what they're going to be getting? And now they want to focus on SEO and optimizing the site. And that was exactly the words of this marketing person. So, well, now we want to optimize the site.
Well, and that kind of brings full circle the conversation of why you need to address both collectively, because you can do you can do all of these things against the budget. It doesn't mean that you have to have unlimited funds. The key point is that you have to look at it collectively and strategically, so that you're not cherry picking one thing, and then once those funds run out, you stop and you wait. And that's what we were just saying about the starting and stopping. You actually wind up wasting more resources in the long term.
Yeah, because there's a ramp-up phase.
Yeah.
Just like anything else. It's hibernating during the winter and eating and gorging, and then spring comes and you need to hit the gym really super hard and starve yourself so that you can lose all this weight, have your beach body.
Right.
And then it starts all over again in the fall. It's working against itself. There's no point in doing so. The starting point is clearly what goals do you want to hit? And those can be a wide variety of, I just want to get a better ranking, or, you know, something like I can say that echoes of this office in our case is we want to generate some more quantifiable leads. So we knew the data that we were getting from our leads, and we knew the conversion ratio and the lead time of that and what was the cost per acquisition, but then this entire sales cycle. So knowing that, we can kind of move forward from that point. They can't hear you shaking your head. Just so you know.
Thank you.
Yes.
So a couple things that people can do when thinking about this, because really the main takeaway is to try and envision a bigger picture, everything that you want to do first, and then look at assigning resources and budgets against that. And also don't be scared out of the gate that just because you look at five or six different things, that necessarily means, you know, the budget goes up five or six fold.
It's no different than a slot machine, but it's going to be a slower run, essentially. But you're not going to sit there for 2 hours and just keep stuffing $100 bills on a slot machine with no type of return. You need to look at it any type of maintenance and marketing you're going to be doing on your web properties as well. You want to have reporting. You want to make sure that everybody's very, very clear in where the destination is against the timeline, but then you want to benchmark that along the way. And don't necessarily wait 30 days. Don't necessarily wait 2 weeks. Look at it on a regular basis and how things can be tweaked or how things can be changed. And like you had just said, it's really important to assign the proper budgets and allocate the resources. So it could be staff members, it could be the agency or the marketers you're paying, to be accountable so that they're understanding exactly what they should be doing and how they should be deciphering that data back to consumable information that allows you to make decisions.
Right. And one of the suggestions in our sort of 3 points here, the first one was acknowledge and plan. So every business knows that they're going to have a downtime, that they're going to have a busy season. They know what their business cycle is. So it sounds basic, but when you lay all that out and map it out for 12 or 16 or 18 months and you can cherry pick or pinpoint when things are going to happen, it helps you plan. It helps you plan better. So, you know, even a simple editorial calendar, so you know when you need to ramp up resources or when you're going to have some additional downtime to do things. But as simple as it sounds, just acknowledging when those things are going to happen and planning for that accordingly.
Yeah, you only know how your business is going to work and when you can expect to receive business, when people will be looking for proposals, or people will be looking to put bids together, or their budgets come up annually. They need to decide where to spend their money by September 30th, October 30th for the following fiscal year. Those are important parts to know your industry and how those things are going to sway itself. But you also have to look into other factors as well. Economy, you have to look at in your industry specifics that are happening or that are changing. Could be a major conference, could be software releases or updates that are being pushed
out. Legislation,
it could be political arena. Some of the marketing aspects would be involved in producing content and also actually putting out paid advertising. And if you're in industries that are competitive in a broad stroke, like say with the political arena, obviously all of those costs are going to start to go up very, very high come the fall and in the spring next year. So you want to plan accordingly if you really want to play or you want to piss in that pond.
Right. Key point being to plan. The second one of that, and this usually leaves the worst taste in somebody's mouth, is when they do something that, you know, a campaign that inevitably ends that had some buzz. But then once that buzz fades, what happens? There's that, you know, buyer's remorse, so to speak. So really leveraging those, you know, I don't know, Kim Kardashian seems to be in the news every third day for nothing more than a selfie being pregnant or whatever. So, you know, she found a way to successfully take that 15 minutes of fame and keep leveraging that over and over. So,
well, and plus people know that people want to hear about her and what's going on with her family.
Really? And,
well, you know, measurements online are going to be clickbait and acquisition from links.
So where are they clicking to and how long is it keeping people? I mean, that's trained behavior. So you have to understand, if it's going to be TMZ or it's going to be Inquirer, it's going to be the Daily USA Today, they are looking at the analytics. So if they put out a headline, they know that if they simply change one word, okay, and it could be from an adjective to a noun, they have a better opportunity to actually get more clicks over to that, which will increase impressions on that page, which then derives them revenue. There's no joking. They've spent more money than you, I, and all of our customers have ever spent. They've wasted. They've lost learning what works or what doesn't work. So you bring up a great point about something like that, too, is leveraging the peaks and also trends. Right. So if Kim Kardashian's pregnant, you could, and you sold a bunch of baby equipment or baby clothing, you could talk about some of the hot brands that are out right now and what other parents that recently have given birth and had children, what they're utilizing. Is it this new trendy, really super ultra expensive stroller that you're one of seven distributors in the country to do? Being aware of that type of thing and how to hijack or jump on the trends,
yeah,
can help out in a large way.
Even if you can't be opportunistic or you're not on, you know, reality TV, the other piece of that of leveraging the peak is just simply divide and conquer with internal resources to make sure that as that buzz starts to die down, you're transitioning into something else, so you don't again go completely flat and have to start and stop, you know, start over again. So that was the other idea behind leveraging the peaks, not just being opportunistic, but also making sure you have some sort of transition plan in place when you ramp down activity.
Yes. And then the third is maximizing your downtime.
So on average, do you feel like you have enough time in the day?
Every day. I'm pretty bored.
All right. So you're the wrong person to ask this, but typically the consensus is...
Lie.
The consensus is there's never enough time in the day, which means if you do have downtime, if you do have a slow period, make best use of it and figure out how to jumpstart things or be best prepared when it is time to ramp up activity to hit the ground running instead of, you know, sitting around kind of scratching your head wondering why.
This may be long-winded for 20 seconds, but I've recently adopted Wunderlist, which is an online tool that just basically creates lists and allows you to break them apart into different lists and also allows you to share and assign tasks with due dates to different people. I got very, very into it, very, very elaborate on getting micro on everything that was going on. And then I stepped back and actually got a little bit more broad stroke so that I knew when I did have some of this downtime or an appointment canceled or I had a 3-hour block that opened up, I can now tackle some things on here. And I knew I could go to some of these broad strokes rather than something very, very micro defined. And those are good planning days. So I think it's also good to forecast out when you anticipate having downtime and actually scheduling some downtime too, just so that you can grab some of the things in your list that's some of your minuscule bullshit that can be done in the next 30, 60 days that aren't important and impeding to be done by tomorrow afternoon at 3:00.
Exactly. So create the urgency around it, even though there really is no urgency when you have that extra time.
Going back to the planning, I think we can conclude on this too. I think it's really important to look at, you can just use it, the term the editorial scheduling. What are we publishing? What are we putting out there? What supportive information are we feeding to search engines? Are we feeding to a number of different sites or algorithms that are going to be driving traffic back to our site in different ways? And knowing if I have a product or I have, let's say it's a speaker and they're going to be doing some training sessions and they're going on a 7-city tour, knowing what I need to publish and where I need to publish those pieces of content and how those are going to reinforce and be tied together are going to be very, very important.
Good points.
All good points. And you want to wrap it up? You want to conclude?
So we will recap this. I'll recap all of this in the blog, but the three points to conclude on, acknowledge and plan, leverage your peaks, and maximize your downtime.
And we thank you for joining us on this beautiful, beautiful, sunny Detroit concrete urban jungle.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or SoundCloud. Remember, you can post comments or want to be on the show. Head on over to tmprod.com and hit the podcast section. All content on this show is copyright by Trademark Productions or their respective owners.